One of the most difficult concepts to grapple with on Remembrance Sunday is reconciliation, because it has to do with the healing of broken relationships. And when that relationship has been damaged because of atrocities, because of hatred, because of war and conflict, the pain and the hurt can be so deeply felt that there can be a huge barrier built up that's almost impossible to overcome. So in the face of such an overwhelming challenge in this context, wouldn't it be great, wouldn't it be helpful if there were people who were dedicated to bring reconciliation? Well, there are, and they're called the children of God, His church. And the thing that we are called to bring is a ministry of reconciliation. We've been looking for weeks now at what is in your hands when it comes to serving God. Well, today, what is in your hands? A ministry of reconciliation. And doesn't the world need it? There is so much conflict in our world. In fact, I hear lots of people say, could it be that there's so much conflict around and so many wars that surely these are signs that we are approaching that end of times that Scripture speaks about? Well, I want to address that for just a moment, because so often as we look at the bad news of the world around us, so often I hear Christians quoting the words of Jesus as he spoke about those end time events in Matthew 24. And Jesus was answering the disciples when they asked this question: tell us, what will be the sign of your coming and at the end of the age? And Jesus responded with these words that I so often hear us talk about: you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. That's verse 6 of Matthew 24. And because of Jesus' words in this passage, whenever we hear of dreadful events around us and we see warfare brewing, and especially when some of it takes place in the vicinity of Israel, people jump to this verse and they begin to wonder, is this a sign of the end of the age? But before we run down that road too far, I want to encourage us to read what Jesus said immediately after us in the rest of this verse. He said, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Panic not. If we understand Jesus' statement about wars and rumors of wars to mean that warfare is a sign that the world is about to come to an end, then actually we are doing the exact opposite of what Jesus calls us to do, which is not to be alarmed, not to allow wars and rumors of wars to concern us to that degree. Why? Because the end is still to come. Do you know, in the same way Jesus spoke about false prophets, false messiahs in verse 5, he spoke about famines and earthquakes in verse 7, persecution and hatred in verse 9, false prophets in verse 11. But all of these, including wars and rumors of wars, are the beginnings of birth pains. And unfortunately, what's tended to happen is that when Jesus was pointing to these events as being the things that are not necessarily the signs of the end of the age being imminent, people have made them precisely that. And we look at them, and so wars and rumors of wars have been taken to be so key to being something dreadful is about to happen. Probably not helped by the fact that in Revelation we read of the four horsemen of the apocalypse as being the precursors, the harbingers, the bringers of war, and that perhaps adds to it. But the signs, according to Jesus, these are just birth pains. This is a world who's living apart from God and is struggling to cope with it. And this is the consequence of what we see. But you might say to me, hang on, Steve, come on, you see the news like everybody else. We hear of wars all over the place, don't we? Surely there are more than ever. Really? Let me share with you what has happened in terms of warfare and some of the consequences just since Jesus spoke these words, before you think things are so bad today. The Roman Empire decided to expand its empire, and then it contracted again, for 500 years from the time of Jesus. Then there were the Crusades, another couple of hundred years, where people from Europe went to the Holy Land and fought with Muslims who went to the Holy Land, and so on. I don't suppose we think much about the Mongol conquests of the whole of Asia. Do you know, it's estimated that 30 to 80 million deaths occurred because of that. You think things are bad today? And then there's the Hundred Years' War. I don't know why it's 100 years. The maths isn't very good there, but hey. The battle between England and France that some would argue still goes on today. Then there's the Dutch War of Independence, or the 80 years of war. They're better at maths than we are. And then the 30 years war. Do you realize 8 million deaths in this horrendous conflict? Most destructive of the time in Europe. It reshaped the European map. Then there was the 7 years war, where Europe was essentially split according to whether you supported Britain or France. It suggested that that was the beginning of the great battles for independence in America and the French Revolution as a result. There were the Napoleonic Wars. 7 million people in Europe lost their lives in these wars. Go on a little further. The American Civil War, hundreds of thousands died. The Russian Civil War, which continued after the First World War, 10 million people lost their lives as a consequence. World War I that we're thinking about today, 15 million deaths estimated. World War II, 66 million deaths. The Korean War, the fight against on the peninsula of Korea against communism, 3.5 million lives. Vietnam War on a different peninsula, not far away, but the same principle. More war, 2 million deaths. The Gulf Wars, Afghanistan War, and I could mention the Syrian conflict that continues, and ISIS. Add it all together. So much warfare, so many people killed. And I've not included some of the less well-known conflicts. Stalin, 20 million Russians lost their lives with his reforms. The Cultural Revolution in China, 40 million people died. Well before that, Congo gaining independence, 8 million people died. You didn't know about these things. And the Rwandan genocide, and there are so many other things that we could speak about. Here's the point. This is a really broken world. And it always has been. And there have always been wars and rumors of wars. Now, I'm not stressing this because I've suddenly got a thing for history, if you might think that after last week as well. But I'm stressing it because it is really important to counter Christian behavior which is contrary to Jesus' teaching. And he called us not to be alarmed. But that's the very thing that so often happens when we hear the things that we hear. Isn't that disobedience? And I felt I needed to share that today. Instead, I believe he's given us something else to do as his people. And that is to practice this ministry of reconciliation in the face of all of this conflict. So when the world speaks of hate and despair, we can speak of love and hope, because that's the message of reconciliation. When our families and our neighbours get upset and fearful and despondent, we should remain calm and at peace and thankful that God has given us reconciliation. Because that's what it is to speak what God's called us to speak as his ambassadors, to speak out good news. And it is good news because there is an answer to the conflicts of the world today, but it isn't a political one. There is hope, there is a future, which is why it's called good news, because that's the message of reconciliation that the Lord, our God, offers to this world. And the beautiful thing is we share this message is that people don't need to struggle to attain it, to achieve it, because God has done it all for us. As we saw last week when we were thinking about Martin Luther and what he brought through the Reformation, salvation is a gift of God. It is grace. You can't earn it. You can't work for it. You can't achieve it. You can't buy it. It is a gift of God. And that's the good news. So I want to really encourage us to stop joining in with the rest of the world when it gets all worried because the TV's on all the time, or you're reading your mobile app that gives you the BBC's news constantly. And when the world, with its newspapers and everything else and its discussion, because it's bombarded by things, talks about this negative picture. I want to encourage us not to go along with them and get upset and to be fearful with the world, but instead to do what God asks us to do, which is to speak a story of hope and good news. Speak it! And if you do, you'll do your body a world of favours. You'll never have to see a chiropodist again. Did you know that? Yeah, Isaiah. How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns. And when the world is looking and thinking, what are we going to do about North Korea? What are we going to do about the President of the United States? You can say, your God reigns. You have to force it down someone's throat, but your confidence can speak for you. We just have to share it. And the beautiful thing is, it is all laid out in this passage in 2 Corinthians 5. And when we start to grasp what God has done through this ministry of reconciliation and recognize that's what he's given to us, so our attitude to world events changes, people look at us and see that our attitude is different, and maybe it will charge them and call them to think differently and recognize there is a message and a God of hope. So I give you the ministry of reconciliation. Paul is writing in this passage to Corinth, and from what we know of Corinth already, it's a church in some degree of conflict. One of the things that they have done is they have lost sight of the core message, which is what Jesus did for this world, what God has already done, the beautiful message of salvation that does your feet the world of good. They've lost sight of that. And instead, they've got sidetracked by personalities and politics and human solutions. They are thinking, as it says in verse 16, in a worldly manner. So they've listened to Paul, and they're challenging his authority. They've challenged his message. And Paul is writing to counter this. But he doesn't waste his time with those ridiculous red herring arguments. He gets straight to the point, and he comes to what God has done through Jesus, reconciled us to the Lord, the very thing that unites us all. So often, don't we do exactly the same thing? Be honest. When you talk to your families, when you talk to your neighbours, when you talk to people in the street, don't we discuss politicians and the state of the world? And don't we get upset so often and miss the main point, which is, yes, but I know those things are happening, but I believe in a God of hope. Do we miss the point that Jesus was sent by his heavenly Father to die so that we could be reconciled to him? Do we think in a worldly way instead about leaders and policies and laws and wars and negotiations of Brexit and solving the world's problems? And we all have our own opinions on those things, when instead perhaps we should be talking about the one guaranteed true solution, which is God's solution, which is an invitation for the world to be reconciled to him. Well, that's what he calls us to do. And the good news in this passage is that God has done two things to make it possible. In verse 18, we read, all of this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Two things that God has done in that for you. The first thing, he's reconciled us to himself. He's reconciled us to him. What a wonderful gift he's given us. That's your salvation. Shouldn't that put a smile on our faces? In the face of nightmare stuff going on around us, that should bring us joy. But he's done more. He's then gone on to give us the ministry of reconciliation. He's given us the capacity to share it. So those who have been reconciled become reconcilers. Not only have you got beautiful feet, you've got a job for life. This is good. Why aren't you smiling? Do we get what reconciliation is, I wonder? Paul's the only New Testament writer to use this word. It means to make a change, to put things right, and very specifically, to put things right in a relationship between humans and God. And notice from the beginning of that verse, it is God who's done this. It's God's initiative. He's the reconciler. It's emphatic. God was reconciling us to himself. We've not done it. God has done it. He's the initiator. He's not the recipient of this process of reconciliation. He makes it happen. And the recipient is the world, human beings. And it happens through Christ, because of the cross of Christ and his death on the cross. That's what makes it possible. Can I try and illustrate this to you? Give you a really simple illustration involving me, okay? This is really visual. It's not slapstick. It's just, you know, it's me. It is just basic. What's in your hands? Well, here's an illustration of the gospel message. We have in this hand, on the one hand, we have God in heaven, holiness, perfection. And on this hand, we have human beings, sinfulness, imperfection. But in the shape of a cross, we have God's answer. His answer for you is that his love was so great, he sent Jesus to die on a cross. Because there's a fundamental problem. His holiness and our sinfulness cannot be together because he's a holy God. So what do you do about it? He sends Jesus to die on a cross and take the sin that is the thing that holds us from God and take it upon himself and take it down into hell. That is the message of reconciliation. That's what God has done for us. And if you go on to the next verse, we read that as a consequence, God no longer counts our sins against us. No longer counted against us. Do you know if you were, what that term means? To count against them. In commerce terms, it's referred to as a debt. Today, we all have credit cards, don't we? We flash all of our debt onto a credit card. And it's made so easy. This country, we're told, is actually buckling under the weight of the debt that we owe. And they make it so easy for you. Now you don't even have to remember your number. You just tap the machine and ping. You owe a little bit more. The debt goes on a card. Here, not counting those sins means not posting debts to our account that are rightfully ours. That credit card holds your debt. You are legally responsible for it. And God says he will not hold that debt against you. The debt is called in Scripture sin or trespasses. Those things that cause us to slip and live a life that is not what God intended. And Jesus took upon himself our sin, our debt, so that we could be the righteousness of God. Isn't that stunning? This week I've been challenged about that because, ironically, of the news. I've been thinking because I've got a new round of Brexit talks, haven't we? And if you listen to them, it's all about negotiation. Have you noticed? So the British team and the European team are bringing what they want to get out of it so that we have a fair and equitable agreement at the end. That's what they're trying to achieve. Though both sides know full well what they really mean is they want the best possible deal for them. If you listen to the President of the United States, who this week has been in Asia, he was saying the same things. He wants a better trade deal for poor America. He wants equity and fair trade. But what both sides really know is actually they want the best deal for them. Can I say to you that when you were reconciled to God, it constituted the most unfair deal that has ever been made? What did Jesus get out of it? He got to carry your guilt, your sin, your debt. What did you get out of it? You got to be clothed in righteousness. Wow. That's the nature of our God, who reconciled us to him by taking upon himself through Christ what was in the way in that relationship. And then, when he'd given us that righteousness, he then invited us to be statesmen for him, statesmen and women, ambassadors for Christ. The end of verse 9 goes on to say, and he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. Who does that? All those things you've done wrong. Okay, I'll take all of that. And you can be my representative instead. Do we know what he's done? Committed to us the message of reconciliation. Something else I was thinking about as I was reflecting on this week. Do you know when Paul had that message of reconciliation committed to him? You'll read about it in Acts chapter 9. It happened in the house of Judas, not Judas Iscariot, another Judas, in Straight Street in Damascus. And I saw the irony of that for the first time this week. This is Straight Street in Damascus. Well, it's one end of it. at the Bab Sharki gate, one of a few gates. This is the only original Roman gate left in Damascus on the east end of the town, and it's called Bab Sharki. So this is Straight Street, and it's a very, very long street, goes on and on and on to the centre of the old Damascus. But it has been in the news recently because there was an explosion here in that region of Bab Sharki because of the conflict taking place. And I think it was either Thursday or it might have even been Friday. On the news, I heard that there is this little enclave which is held by rebels who are holding out against the Damascus regime, just to the east of Damascus, just to the east of that gate. In Paul's neighborhood, where 2,000 years ago, there was a message of reconciliation committed to him, and it's still desperately needed today. Same thing. Well, the nature of Paul's appointment was to serve as no less than Christ's ambassador. And that role of an ambassador is a statesman, statesperson. They're to represent the interests of God when they're away from him. And that is our privilege too. It is as though God were making his appeal through you. That's the ministry of reconciliation. So the question I want to ask is, how often do we truly represent God and speak of this message of reconciliation? In the face of all the bad news and people's gripes, how often do we stand up and say, yes, but there is some good news in all of this? Well, I know you all do it at least once a year. You are all heralds of the good news once a year at least, and I hope you will be in about a month's time, when we sing, "Hark the herald angels sing," because that's what you're doing. You're making the declaration. Glory to the newborn king, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. But as the advert says, a puppy is not just for Christmas, it's for life. Well, so is the message of reconciliation. It is for the whole of time. And in our broken world, I want to call us to change our conversation. What is in your hands? Well, not just to agree with the world, but to especially to those who don't know the Lord, to share that there's a wonderful message of good news. Let's stop dwelling in the negativity of some of the news we hear, because it's all relative. There have always been conflicts. There's always been sin. And you just hear about it more now because this is the media age. But we are called not to be alarmed, but to be ambassadors for Christ. So I want to end by coming back to where this service started and think about, for a moment, the Great War. Because this week I was reading an article written about the Great War from a Christian perspective, asking the question, why is it that the Great War failed to be the war to end all wars? And as they looked at the information of why the war started, why it escalated as it did, and what happened afterwards that meant that wars were inevitably going to follow, they drew all sorts of interesting conclusions. Diplomats that didn't listen to the truth, to reality, to good communications, because they'd already made their minds up. They thought they'd get a better deal out of war. Nations that were overconfident of what their abilities were because they thought they had huge armies. Little nations that became arrogant themselves because they thought they'd always be backed up by other nations, that just led to escalation. And it was summed up like this: mistakes, blunders, poor communications, lies, distrust, tensions, the desire for recognition and significance, and revenge. Those were the things that meant that that war was not the last. But on that list of things I've just read to you, do you notice? They're all part of the human condition. Those very things that cause world leaders and nations to enter wars they can't get out of and stop are the same things that cause neighborhoods to battle against neighborhoods, families to battle against fellow family members, individuals to have hurts with one another. It's the human heart, and left unchecked, the consequence will always be more conflict. And just like European leaders, ordinary people make decisions under pressure because they think they're doing the right thing at the time, and are often looking out for what will allow them to survive, to keep going, or what might be in their best interest. God gives us a call to be his people, to do something different. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love those who persecute you. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. This is what Jesus said. Well, you're called children of God, aren't you? Isn't it time that we became peacemakers? In the circumstances where we find people arguing or upset, where we find people carrying burdens, the first thing is that we bring a peace and a calm, because we are individuals who can know reconciliation with God. We should be showing that and taking that into hostile situations. But secondly, we are given the ministry of reconciliation, so we can use the principles of what God has done for us, where he didn't do what was fair and equitable, but he gave himself on a cross. And we can speak the love of God into those situations where there is hurt. And maybe we can listen without taking sides, one of the big problems of the Great War. Maybe we can listen when people are in conflict. We can hear the pain. We can acknowledge the pain. And whether it is within your family with members that don't speak to one another, whether it is with neighbors that don't talk to one another, whether it's in the workplace where people are at odds, we can be peacemakers and use the principle of share the reconciliation of Christ that we know and give hope to others, but also deal with a very practical pain that people feel in their circumstances. May we be a people that bring a ministry of reconciliation.